Oyez, 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 the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas is now in session pursuant to adjournment.
Thank you. Be seated. Court will hear three causes and oral submission this morning. In the order of their presentation, they are as follows. Louis Terezov and others versus the Honorable Mario Ramirez, an original mandamus proceeding. State of Texas versus Lynn D. Durham and others from Travis County. And Syntex Corporation versus John Dalton from Bexar County. The court will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each of these causes, but we will complete the oral submission docket before our lunch break. The times allotted to the various parties and interveners have been told to you, and you may designate with the marshal any times that you wish to leave for rebuttal if you are a petitioner or a relator. These arguments are being recorded for the convenience of the court. You may make application with our clerk to hear the tapes should you desire to do so. The court is now ready to hear argument from relators, Terezos versus Ramirez.
May it please the court, argument for the relators will be presented by Mr. John McCamish. Mr. McCamish has reserved 15 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm John McCamish for the relators. May it please the court. What we have in this situation, Your Honor, is our application to mandamus the Honorable Ed Ramirez from Hidalgo County, along with the Attorney General and the Secretary of State. What has happened in the course of proceedings in the Valley is nothing more or less than the Attorney General having ignored and indeed trampled the Texas Constitution. He has ignored his oath of office. He has ignored the separation of powers doctrine. And as importantly, he has ignored the right for the people of the state of Texas to vote. Specifically, the Constitution provides that only the legislature shall provide for redistricting of the state Senate after each decennial digest. Instead of defending the Senate class plan, Senate Bill 31, as he was sworn to do, he has abandoned that plan after litigating it for some months, and along with a few interest groups, specifically MALDEF and the Texas Civil Rights Project, has entered into a separate deal with them and has induced Judge Ramirez to exceed his authority and, in effect, enter a void judgment approving what became known as the Quiroz-Mena plan. It was simply the product of a backroom deal. Now, how did this start? It started last February, long before the legislature passed SB1. There was a suit filed in the Valley attacking the census and the manner in which the census allegedly undercounted minorities. Subsequent to that time, when SB 31 became final, my clients filed suit in the United States District Court here in Austin. A three-judge panel was convened, and it specifically attacked SB 31 and other acts of redistricting. Thereafter, there was an amendment through a cathartic process, if you will, converting the census suit into an alleged redistricting suit. First, the Attorney General, shortly thereafter, went into federal court here in our case, where he was a party, and tried to enjoin that suit, the amendment. This was denied simply because he did not have any standing to enjoin the suit. What happened then, very quickly, is the Attorney General says that he was against a deadline with the Justice Department. Supposedly, the Justice Department had SB 31 in front of it, and the preclearance process was going forward, and it was to be ended approximately October the 8th. Rather than let the Justice Department decide whether SB 31 should be precleared, the Attorney General, in league with The so-called interveners in this case, but they are real parties in interest, as the court pointed out, entered into a deal. They filed the Caro's lawsuit, and the reason they didn't do this in the Manna case right away is because the Manna case was already in front of this court, and this court had stayed proceedings. So they came up with a new plaintiff, and they filed the Caro's lawsuit, and in the same day, they entered into an agreed judgment, providing for a plan. 2 days later, they asked this court to send the Manna plan back, and all of a sudden, SB 31 is abandoned State District Court in Hidalgo County. The preclearance process is withdrawn from the Justice Department, and we have what is now known as the Caro's Manna plan. Effectively, the state of Texas, through the Attorney General, was a party to the repeal of SB 31, and it now had a new plan, not approved by the voters of the state of Texas or their duly elected representatives, but rather approved by the court. Now, the Attorney General up to that point had recognized the state's process. The status of redistricting is that first the legislature will have an opportunity to pass a plan, and if it fails to do so, the Legislative Redistricting Board, as provided by the Constitution, to pass a plan. As it is said in briefs filed in this and the Federal District Court, first the people intend for the legislature to be given the opportunity and duty to act on these apportionment matters in the first instance. Second, if for whatever reason the legislature fails to act, the LRB must act. And that's the opinion of the Attorney General in 1991.
The Attorney General's also opined that the legislature may not reapportion in special session. Do you take issue with that?
We would take issue with that because of what has been said by said in the Constitution, that it shall be done in the first regular session after the passage of the decennial digest, or excuse me, the decennial census. However, I don't believe that we reached that issue, and I think that certainly an argument can be made that a special session can be apportioned.
Well, in Mosley versus LRB, this court did not reach the issue of whether or not the legislature could reapportion in special session because the jurisdiction of the LRB had not expired. Specific remedy alternative, I should say, do you suggest that the Attorney General had once it became apparent, as apparently it has now in the Manna case, that Judge Ramirez would hold the reapportionment done by the legislature to be invalid? What alternatives were available?
The alternative that was available to them, Your Honor, it was October the 8th. They still had 15 days for the LRB to meet. Had the Justice Department not pre-cleared on October the 8th, under the Constitution, the LRB could meet right up until October the 23rd.
Mr. McCamish, this is not the first time the Attorney General has settled a lawsuit. In fact, this is not the first time the Attorney General has settled a redistricting lawsuit. How do you distinguish the cases that specifically give the Attorney General the power to settle lawsuits?
All right, Your Honor. Specifically, I would say that the Attorney General in certain areas has the power to settle lawsuits. And there are a number of instances under the Tort Claims Act. He does not have the power to, in effect, write a new statute or agree to a new statute. This is not the implementation of an ordinary remedy. This is, in effect, new legislation. A redistricting plan is, in fact, legislation. And I would...
So he can settle old laws, but not new laws. Is that the rule?
No, not at all, Your Honor. I think he can settle a case under a statute, but he can't repeal that statute and write a new one, and that's what he's done.
If I understand, you wanted the federal court in Austin to rewrite the statute, and you're upset because the state court in Brownsville did.
No, Your Honor, it's not a question of rewriting the statute. What we're asking the federal court in Austin to do is to, if there is nothing else there that's properly passed under the state law, and keep in mind, we did not, we had nothing to do with how the Constitution and how the LRB were created. All we're asking them to do is to come up with interim plans for interim elections. That's not the same thing as what has been done here. Here we have
the people, the voters of Texas, have a constitutional right, once given, to vote.
So the distinction is the federal court, under your request here in Austin, would just rewrite the law for one election, and what has occurred down in the valley, you say, is a rewriting of the elections for the next 10 years.
That's very possible, Your Honor. However, the federal court here in Austin, under the federal scheme, has the authority to draw interim plans. The state court, and this is Avery versus Midland, as has been pointed out under the authority of this court, has no authority to do interim plans. They must be done, as was done in Avery, by the commissioner's court. They must be done by the body that the state statute gives the right to draw the plans.
Now, during this time that the Attorney General, you allege, was ignoring his oath and the Constitution and most everything but his name, that was from February up till October?
No, Your Honor, it didn't happen until October. He, in fact, was defending SB 31 up until October.
Well, you certainly had an opportunity when you saw this lawsuit filed, or your clients did, in February to intervene.
No, that's not true either, Your Honor, because we had no reason to believe.
Well, you had a right to intervene, didn't you?
We would have had a right to intervene, but we weren't interested in the census counts, Your Honor. This was a census lawsuit. It was a census lawsuit, and it didn't turn into a redistricting lawsuit until after we had filed our suit here.
It wasn't part of the relief they were asking for in that census lawsuit, as you put it, for the court down there to adopt an interim plan and to take into effect the undercount, which the federal government has acknowledged is somewhere between 500,000 and 700,000 Texans?
Well, Your Honor, I don't know exactly what relief they were asking for in terms of an interim plan. They did say there was an undercount.
Now, but in any event, you and your clients could have intervened in that case and sought such relief as you thought appropriate, could you not?
Your Honor, we were free to intervene early on, but there was no reason to believe that we should have.
And you chose not to?
No, we chose to bring our suit where we could get complete relief, know that that relief would be proper under both state and federal law, know that we could use the census, and there's a very interesting supremacy question there, because the census that has been put out by the Commerce Department and affirmed by the Commerce Department, while it may be under attack in the Valley and in New York, is still arguably, under the supremacy clause, the numbers that must be used. And we didn't see any reason to reach any of those issues.
So your lawsuit in the federal court here, which was filed before the legislature adjourned, attacked all four redistricting plans. The State House of Representatives, State Senate, Congressional redistricting, and the State Board of Education, did it not?
That's not correct, sir. We did not attack the State Board of Education plan. And while our lawsuit was filed before the Senate adjourned, it was filed after. There was no way the Senate, under its own rules, could change the plan that was going to come out as SB 31.
But it was before all of the plans had been filed. And
no, Your Honor, that's not
Congressional had been passed at the time you filed your lawsuit?
I'm sorry?
Congressional.
No, and our first lawsuit...
And yet you attacked congressional redistricting.
Certainly, we said you could not hold congressional elections under the 1980 plans.
My point is that you criticize the plaintiffs in this case, and what you refer to as the census case, for filing their case before any plan was ever passed, and yet you did exactly the same thing in the federal court.
I didn't criticize them for filing, for attacking the census at all, Your Honor. That they were free to do. But if they want a legal interim plan, they have to go back to the legislature under state law to get it. They could certainly attack the census, and then the proper way to have gone was to go back and ask the legislature to come up with a plan that took into account the census. Now, before that ever happened, Your Honor, I think you would have seen the Justice Department move against
counsel,
the state of Texas on those points.
Yeah, question. I don't understand. We have a situation. The legislature is not in continual session. It cannot convene itself. Convene constitutionally an odd number of years. It can only convene otherwise when it's called by the governor, and only pertaining to those subjects that the governor submits to it. It's not like a commissioner's court in Avery, it's a continual session. If we have a political void, you're saying that the state within itself has no remedy. if the legislature fails to act or fails to act legally, the legislative redistricting board is not convened or its time to convene expires for some reason, and the governor declines to call the legislature in a special session, you're saying that there is no entity within the state of Texas that has any authority to intervene so that we can have this done in an orderly manner, but that it's perfectly all right for a federal judge to intervene and write a plan that the attorney general cannot negotiate, that the courts cannot approve or pass on. You're saying that we are stuck with that political void unless and until some federal authority intervenes. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. We have provided...
There's a hiatus in the law.
I don't believe there's a hiatus in the law, Your Honor. The state of Texas had plenty of time to get everything done. Keep in mind...
It's not a question of whether the state of Texas. It's a question of what authority in the state of Texas. Yes, the legislature still has time to act, but unless they're convened by the governor, they may not act. What entity is supposed to fill that void? What entity is prepared or has the authority to address those questions outside of federal authority?
There is none at this time, Your Honor. Both.
I don't think that the voters of Texas or the drafters of the Constitution ever envisioned that type of void existing that cannot be accommodated by someone. In other areas where a branch of government fails to act, the other branches are empowered and do, in fact, fill the void. It's not a usurpation if it's an abrogation.
Well, Your Honor, then you could say, and the state has tried to do this, you could say then that 19 senators getting together and putting their imprimatur on the plan, the Carozmena plan, does it. But then you're saying that the state legislature...
Well, I don't think if they'd never consulted a single senator, it wouldn't have made any difference. I think that's totally irrelevant. They're not convening themselves. They have no authority to act or to represent the remainder of the Senate or the legislature. But does the Attorney General? That's the question. I don't care who drew the plan.
Once you accept that, Your Honor, then the Attorney General is free to redraw the insurance code, the tax code, and any other piece of legislation that he cares to do so.
He should avoid exist. He has authority of interpretation to avoid it, but the courts will finally determine that.
Your position, though, is that in the circumstance we find ourselves in today, the Texas Constitution mandates that we surrender this decision to the federal courts.
Yes.
And that further, based on your legal analysis that you gave us earlier concerning the supremacy clause, you and your clients made a conscious legal decision not to intervene in this lawsuit in the Valley from February right up until the time it ended down there.
We had no reason to intervene.
You made a conscious decision not to do so.
Not to do so, but not until October. Up till October, the Attorney General was defending SB 31. It was only in the dead of night when the Carozmena deal came off in one day.
Well, of course, and there were interventions in that. There were attempted interventions in that suit.
It was an attempted intervention, Your Honor. It was not successful. It was after.
And there's a remedy by appeal, is there not, when it's not successful?
I don't believe in that situation there was no remedy. We could not have intervened after a final judgment.
There's certainly a remedy by appeal. Someone's denied an intervention, isn't there?
On an abuse of discretion basis after the fact.
So there is a remedy by appeal.
No, because the Texas law is against you, Your Honor. You can't appeal or intervene after it's a final judgment.
Is it your contention that there was no remedy by appeal under the laws of the state of Texas from the denial of the intervention of Senator Sims and Lucio?
The law was against them.
That they had no right of appeal regarding the adverse ruling of the trial court?
That's correct. Because they had no right to intervene after a final judgment was entered.
Thank you.
Mr. McCamish, is it your position that the legislature has no authority to redistrict the Senate or House more often than once every 10 years?
No, not at all, Your Honor.
The legislature can do that in any regular session?
I believe in the next regular session they could.
But in a special session, do you agree or disagree with the Attorney General's 1971 opinion?
I believe that's an open issue, Your Honor. I don't believe it's been reached in Texas.
Mr. McCamish, as a matter of fact, hasn't the legislature, the Texas legislature, redistricted in special session in 1911, 1921, and 1971. At least that's the information I have according to a Law Review article written by Mr. Bickerstaff, that's exactly what happened. So redistricting a special session is not unprecedented in our state, is it?
It is not, Your Honor. And I must say, in all candor, I was not aware of 1911 or 1917.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Renea Hicks will present argument to respondents.
May it please the court, Renea Hicks with the Attorney General's Office representing the respondents and the real parties in interest that were the defendants below. I think it is fair to say that this is a case of extreme importance, both in terms of substantive rights of minority voters in Texas, the rights of all voters in Texas, and the rights of the people of Texas to have a say in what their electoral system is going to look like. The essential position of the relator here is that this court should construe state law to ensure that state voters and state officials have no say in the state configuration for the Senate election plan. They want to walk down the street this afternoon at 1:30 in a hearing for the federal court there and ask the federal court to impose on the state of Texas an election plan for the state Senate, which has had no public input, and it will have had no state input. That is exactly what the situation is here. There is no reason for this court to construe the Texas Constitution and the Texas allotment of powers that way. In terms of the question about whether the Attorney General has ever opined that the legislature may not act in special session that Justice Horn imposed, at least as late as February, the Attorney General of Texas did not opine that. The Attorney General of Texas simply said in Attorney General Opinion DM6, it's a difficult question, and it showed it at that point. I know
that's
that
what our court has previously said in Molly versus Legislative.
It is not my understanding that that would be the ruling of it.
No,
of the Malzi case. The Malzi case had some language that could be taken either way. The basic view that we had when we reviewed the opinion in drafting Attorney General DM6. I think there's a much better way to look at this about the powers of the legislative district court, the state legislature, and the Attorney General to act. And that is the people of Texas in 1948, when they amended Article 3, Section 28, which took effect in 1951, they were concerned that there was a void. They didn't want a void. Article 3, Section 28 was amended to ensure that there was not a void. Now, at that time, of course, Baker versus Carr and all that followed from that, in terms of giving courts authority to hear redistricting cases and judicially review redistricting issues, was not law. So I wouldn't say that the people of Texas had an opportunity at that time to act with complete assurance of writing a code for how these things should be done. But the purpose of the amendment in 1948 was to give the state of Texas an opportunity to have a say in what its electoral system was going to look like at all times. And the state of Texas has, under Article 3, Section 28, two situations where the void can be filled. One is the legislature has to act when there is a census publication, as there was this time. The second is, if there's a failure, the LRB has to act. There's no choice. In fact, the court mandates the LRB to act.
There's a constitutional gap, however, after the LRB's jurisdiction expires, is there not?
I don't think so. There are several ways in which there is not a gap. In the first place, the Attorney General for a century has been given the authority to settle and resolve lawsuits. The Attorney General has that authority. In this situation, a state district court had held the Senate plan invalid. We were the day before a situation in which under federal law, which again didn't exist back when Article 3, Section 28 was passed, which it was clear to everybody that the federal Justice Department and the bureaucrats there who operate under rules that no one can quite discern were going to invalidate SB 31, which would have left the void. And I've canvassed this in our brief, but the Attorney General exercised his authority, which I think is unquestioned over a century, to try to resolve the matter, to try to abide by the federal constitution, federal law, as well as state law, and to give Texans a system where they could have an election system in place.
This case doesn't so much question the Attorney General's authority to settle lawsuits as it questions the Attorney General's authority to agree to a reapportionment. Isn't that true?
The attorney, somebody has, I'm not quite sure what it is. I think this case
well,
is not about that.
It's not a matter of just settling the lawsuit. It's a matter of substituting a reapportionment under which Article 3, Section 28 grants to the legislature and the LRB only.
Article 3, Section 28 clearly leaves to the ultimate authority of the legislature and the Legislative Redistricting Board, both constitutional legislative offices, the authority to redistrict. Nothing in what the Attorney General has done in entering into an agreement in this case and what Judge Ramirez did in accepting the agreement abrogates that. If you read the order entered, it specifically says that this reapportionment that's put into place is only good until, under Texas law, another body comes in and clears place, changes it.
This substitute plan is not a legislative product, is it?
It is not a legislative product. That is clear. It is a judicial product as a result of litigation brought by the plaintiffs back in February.
Counsel,
under Avery versus Midland County, which was reversed by the United States Supreme Court on other grounds, this court held that the judiciary has no power to redistrict. Isn't that correct?
I think that is an overstatement of that. There is one sentence in the whole opinion at the end.
Let me read it to you on page 428. It says, but neither this court, the Texas Supreme Court in other words, nor the district court has the power to redistrict Midland County into commissioner's precincts.
That is it. That is all it said. That's the only law in the whole history of this court that discusses that. And you have a body down there. It was in continuous session. You didn't have an invalidation at that point. And you didn't have a whole alignment. You didn't have the Attorney General with a century of constitutional authority to act.
What is the constitutional or statutory source, if you can give me a citation to the Attorney General's authority to agree to reapportionment?
Article 4, Section 22 of the Texas Constitution allots the basic powers to the Attorney General of Texas. The cases of this court, Mars, and a host of other cases, which we cited in our brief, say the Attorney General controls the civil litigation of the state.
How do you reconcile that with the separation of powers under Article 2, Section 1? If the Attorney General can essentially settle cases and end run the legislature's or the executive branch's authority by agreeing to a substitute for the products of those branches of government, don't we concentrate all governmental authority essentially in the hands of the Attorney General and a member of the executive branch?
Hardly. First of all, the separation of powers isn't some rigid categorization.
It's not?
It is not a rigid categorization. If it were, this court would have no power of judicial review. This court would have no authority to determine whether the legislature had acted appropriately in the national school finance laws. It would have no authority. So it isn't a rigid categorization. The Attorney General, as long as there is the principle of judicial review in existence, as long as that exists, then we have a very complicated system set up. And we have a system in which occasionally the executive branch, through the Attorney General, when it's called into court and has an invalidation of statute, has to figure out what's best to do in the short term. And I emphasize that is all that happened in this case, is in the short term the Attorney General tried to salvage a difficult situation for the people of Texas. There's nothing wrong with that, and he has that authority. He salvaged it, you might say, in a narrow manner, and besides that, he turned to a court.
Does he have the power?
A
very simple question with an obvious answer. If a state court approves a negotiated redistricting plan that's not a legislative product, is that any more or less a legitimate plan than a judicially produced plan by a federal court that's not a legislative product? I don't understand. It seems to me that any legal authority is going to be given preference or priority in the promulgation of a legislative redistricting plan, other than the legislature as convened by the governor under our Constitution, assuming they do have the power to redistrict in a special session, that would be preferable to the citizens of Texas. and to the integrity of our Constitution for it to be a state authority?
It seems essential. It seems what the law requires. It seems what a century of precedent has said is so in this court with regard to the Attorney General's powers. And I see no way around it, especially if you consider the overwhelming hammer or sword that constantly hangs over the state and redistricting from the Justice Department. We have to go to the Justice Department to get approval for our laws to implement them. The legislature is not in continuous session. If there's one thing that's a fact of life these days, and you can see it in the situation arising from this recent redistricting, is it doesn't matter what the legislature does, it is going to end up in court. The legislature acts with that knowledge.
Has this particular plan that was negotiated by the Attorney General and approved by the District Court been pre-cleared by the Justice Department?
It was pre-cleared on November 18th by the Justice Department. Right. It was the only pre-cleared electoral plan the state of Texas
has. Authority would a federal judge have to intervene if this court asserted its jurisdiction?
Well, to intervene with a decision about whether that's a valid plan, I'm sorry, I don't know.
That's correct. It's been pre-cleared. That's been
well. Of course, we think that the fact of preclearance of this plan means that the state of Texas can go down to the federal courthouse today and should be given approval to go ahead on an interim basis with its elections. The legislature, I go back, I think that there is an easy way, it's an obvious way, and it's consistent with the tradition of what our Texas Constitution does, to construe our Constitution in a way that gives the people of Texas an opportunity to have a continuous say in some fashion in what their electoral system is going to be about and not default to the federal courts and the federal bureaucracies. That is because Article 3, Section 28 talks about mandatory jurisdiction. It talks about when the legislature must act. It talks about when the LRB must act. It does not talk about when they may act. It does not have any prohibitions except with the LRB. It has a prohibition on the LRB's actions that it can't act unless there is in existence a legislative failure.
Well, each branch of government, each department of a government under our Constitution has its delegated powers. But I'm not familiar with any situation in history where one branch or department of government fails to act, that void is not somehow filled by one or a combination of the other branches.
It seems essential to read the Constitution that way. It's the obvious purpose of the amendment. But what I was going to say about the mandatory versus permissive opportunity to redistrict is the Texas Constitution is different than the United States Constitution. The Texas Constitution is not a system of delegated powers for the legislative bodies. It is a system of limiting powers. There has to be a limit, not a delegation. We see in Article 3, Section 28, a mandate to act, but there is not a denial of the opportunity to act. That goes both for the LRB and for the legislature. The legislature always may be called into special session and act, is my reading. I understand the court has never addressed that. But the legislature always may be called in special session act, and I think the same principle applies to the LRB. The LRB always may be called in an act if there is a legislative failure. Even if it acts, the legislature, again under that principle, can still come back and act. So the legislature retains primacy. The LRB retains the opportunity. And in the case of any void that's temporarily created, like we had on August 22nd, when Judge Ramirez said that under our Texas Constitution, the Senate redistricting plan was invalid, the Attorney General has the authority to step in. And the way the injunction is drafted specifically gives the people of Texas an opportunity at all points to have a say in the way their system works. Right now, probably, if the analysis that I've discussed is adopted, the LRB could convene and come back and change Judge Ramirez's order. Right now, probably, if what I'm saying is correct, the legislature, if the governor were willing, could be calling special session and change what Judge Ramirez has ordered into place. There is no usurpation here. There is the filling of a void. Nobody is trying to take authority from the legislature. The Attorney General doesn't want to, doesn't think it's appropriate. In the Attorney General opinion, DM-6, the Attorney General stated then what he has continued to feel, and that is it's ultimately a legislative responsibility. But in the meantime, it clearly is not a federal court responsibility. The people of Texas should have an opportunity to have a say in what their system looks like. And
does the Attorney General have power to effectuate this plan without court approval?
No.
So the ultimate question is whether the district court had the power to order a redistricting plan.
Whether it exercised its discretion appropriately, I would say.
But whether it had, also whether it had the power to do so.
That is the question that it, yes, I think that's so.
If it has the power to do so, what is to prevent whoever wants to from filing a redistricting suit in some state district court and coming up with an order ordering the state to be redistricted with or without the Attorney General's approval?
I think that the integrity of our state judiciary is that we have an elected judiciary. This court has authorized district courts to have, in itself, has engaged in the power of judicial review. And parties may intervene. This party is all, this court is ultimately the appellate court for the state law issues in Texas, and federal law issues in Texas for that matter, they're going to the state court. And the protection is the whole system.
Well,
nobody can unilaterally.
This suit was chosen to be filed in one district. If someone else chose to file a suit in another district in Texas, hoping that a very close question or difficult issues would be seen a different way and there would be a different result, there's nothing to prevent that.
I would think this court, and I've seen doctrines announced by this court about abatement of proceedings that occurred in different time periods involving the same issues. There are all sorts of judicial doctrines that are out there, from a collateral estoppel, res judicata, again, the principles of abatement. And ultimately, whatever this court says can be done in that regard will control how it can be done.
It couldn't be a lot of suits. It would just be whoever got there first.
Well, I suppose it's even possible. I understand the school finance case, there have been a lot of suits.
A lot of suits.
Yes. And it makes it difficult, but that's the reason this court is here.
And
ultimately be the pinnacle at which these questions are resolved.
And ultimately it follows, of course, that this court could order the state redistricted.
I believe ultimately this court could do, step into the breach.
With or without the permission of the Attorney General?
Well, I assume there has to be a case.
Oh, yes.
And
sir,
in an appeal of this case. The Attorney General could resist a particular matter. I believe also, it would be very difficult for this court to draw its own plan.
Do you view that as a surrender of the redistricting process to this court?
I do not.
Why is empowering this court to redistrict the state of Texas any more a surrender of that responsibility than the federal court doing it?
Well, it isn't a surrender. At least it's the state... people subject to election by people in the state making a decision. And I have to emphasize, this court can only, even if it can do that, can only step into the breach. The legislature retains the power to override it through enactment of a statute.
Well,
it effectively moots the decision.
I had in my notes that you said that the relators want to surrender this responsibility to the federal courts.
They want this court.
It hasn't been surrendered because the executive and legislative branches could at any time they chose, under your view of this, collaborate to effectuate a new redistricting plan.
Well,
and if they don't choose to do so, then the federal court has no choice but to go
forward. That's true. If the state chooses to lie supine and do nothing, of course the federal courts are stepping into the breach. That's how we ended up with the federal courts reviewing so many things that used to be state law issues, because states refused to take responsibility for their own affairs in areas as important as voting rights and other civil rights matters. That's how we got where we are today with this difficult situation. And I think it would be a travesty for this court to read the Texas Constitution to further that situation, and I don't think there's any basis for reading it that way. there is, I believe it is appropriate to read the Constitution to make what has happened here precisely consistent with what's happened. There is no shoving aside of the legislature. The legislature, if the governor would call it into special session, may always redistrict.
Counsel, the simple fact is, if the governor, the legislature, and those are not branches, the legislature, they argue, is the only branch that has the authority to redistrict, but in a special session, their action is contingent upon the executive branches calling them into session. They cannot meet unless the governor calls them. And if for one reason or another, they don't like what another department of the executive or another office of the executive department does, and another department of governor does in approving or ratifying that. The court didn't draw the plan, the court approved the plan. Subject to review on its merits by this court. They can meet if they can persuade the governor to call them into session. If they don't like what was done, if the governor doesn't like what was done, they can be convened. But they cannot act unilaterally. They cannot act without the governor's specific call.
That's precisely right.
That creates a void. It doesn't exist in the federal system. It doesn't exist in county commissioners' courts. It does exist here. That void has to be filled. Shouldn't it be filled by state authority?
I think it must be.
They can meet and correct.
I think the law clearly supports that prospect. The Attorney General was careful in reaching agreement to draft any interim injunction, interim plan, so that that always can happen. There is no effort to override. It always must be recalled by this court.
Is this unique?
Well, it's happened.
Aren't there other occasions where the legislature or some office or division or branch or department of government fails to act and some other, either a private citizen, if they have standing, or some other branch or department or office of government steps in and seeks court action to address that void, to address that failure to act, to address that illegal action? Doesn't that occur on a regular basis? Redistricting is not unique in that respect.
It happens every day in our office.
It's happened in public school funding.
It happens every day in state court. It happens every day in federal court. The Attorney General, back when it was created, I'm sure didn't anticipate that this kind of situation would happen, where so many issues would end up being decided in court. But inasmuch as he is the chief legal officer for the state, and inasmuch as courts decide these issues, the Attorney General, by necessity, has a lot of power, and he tries to exercise it with discretion. In this particular instance, he tried to discern as best he could the various potential clients or actual clients' desires, acted consistently with them, and then tried to salvage for the state an electoral system that could be put into place as the statutes of the state of Texas had set it up.
How did he attempt to determine what the interests of his clients were?
Well, the ultimate clients for the Attorney General are always the people of Texas. He represents the people of Texas. But in this particular, and that might be, you might call it kind of an inchoate set of clients. The direct clients here were the governor of Texas and two members of the Texas Legislative Council. They had no problem with what happened. The real parties in interest, to use a term that's appropriate in a mandamus proceeding, in terms of most directly affected and whose statute was most directly affected, was the Senate. The Senate was not in session, but the Attorney General was able to discern from the lieutenant governor who presided over the Senate, was elected by all the people of the state of Texas, and from 19 senators, which constitutes a majority. Nobody's suggesting it's a formal legislative action, but he was able to discern that they had a particular plan, that given the fact that theirs had been declared invalid under the state constitution and was threatened with invalidation by the federal bureaucracy, he was able to discern what they might want in its place. And it was the closest he could come. He made a judgment, and he made it, I might add, under very short-term decision deadlines. We were facing a deadline of October 8th from the Justice Department. And as I said before, no one doubt it, but that the Justice Department was going to invalidate SB 31 at that point. There's nothing written down that says that, but no one doubted it. So there had to be a judgment made. And the unfortunate responsibility, you might say, fell to the Attorney General to fulfill his duties of office. He could not simply turn and walk away and say, let them do what they want.
And
because doing that meant somebody else would admit the federal court did.
And supposing that he discharged that without error, still, it depended upon the approval of the trial court. The trial court could have disapproved the agreement.
That is true.
So,
that's the reason we styled it a joint motion. It wasn't a unilateral announcement that henceforth, Texas, you operate like the Attorney General says.
So, of course, the Attorney General can attempt to reach a resolution in a lawsuit. Isn't the real question here whether the state district court can effectuate redistricting through his own order, an agreed order, or whatever process?
It is a question. It isn't the only question.
Well, without that, the Attorney General's approval would be meaningless.
Well, it's true. We have no authority to simply do it.
In voting rights cases, among others, there's a principle of initial deference to the legislative body. So the federal courts, unless deadlines are such that it's impractical, will, after making an interim order, defer to state to try to come up with a plan which meets the federal law requirements. Is there or should there be any, in your opinion, any similar principle of deference that a state judge should exercise in performing state legislative duties?
I think it's appropriate. And I don't think anything that happened here is contrary to that kind of principle. As I said, in this particular instance, the order was written with essentially no time to act. There was no opportunity to defer to the legislature at this point, given the deadlines that existed. There was no opportunity.
Wasn't this October with a January filing deadline?
It was October 7th with a December 3rd opening of filing. And remember, in this particular instance, simply saying it doesn't do it, the state still has to go through the Justice Department preclearance process. So even if the court were to say, I do nothing, invalid, but I do nothing, I defer to the legislature, when they may act, I'll give them 30 days, let's say. Even if the legislature were to come back into session and enact the plan, they still have to go to the Justice Department and get preclearance, and there was no way practically to do it. And what what this injunction did is set up the system so the state would not be left with nothing. And it set it up so that the legislature could always come back. I mean, the injunction that's written, paragraph 3, I believe, of the injunction in the MENA agreed partial final judgment makes it clear. This injunction, the preceding one that says follow this redistricting plan, this injunction is dissolved immediately upon a valid enactment under Texas law of another redistricting plan, and it always has to be because of federal law, pre-cleared by the Justice Department or a federal court in D.C. So it, in effect, is exactly what Your Honor was just asking about.
That's what I heard on the television this morning.